Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
Now, usually when Adrian Wechler is in this studio, it's to talk about stories under his remit as tech editor of the Irish and Sunday Independent. But today, Adrian is here to talk to me about a much more personal story. Earlier this year, his brother Simon passed away after many years of living with a serious mental health condition. Adrian, good morning to you and thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Listen, let's start with a potted history of the Wechler brothers. Listeners might know that your mom was the great actor, newsreader and novelist Deirdre Purcell. First of all, tell me about her and your father, Robert Wechler.
Yeah, so my mother, Deirdre, she met my father, Robert, in Chicago. She was on a scholarship to Loyola University in Chicago. She was acting there. She met my dad. He was an actor and they hit it off. He showed some potential. He interviewed for the first production of Grease, I remember, which was set in Chicago. That didn't happen. But they came back to Dublin. They got married and they went back to Chicago. They had me. Then they came back to Ireland again to live. And then they had my brother a couple of years later. So my father is American, still lives in Chicago. And that's how life started for us. We moved into a North Dublin estate in Glasnevin. And it was a fairly typical 70s upbringing.
So how many years was between you and Simon then?
It's 2 years and 3 months. So, yeah, 2 years and 3 months.
Very little, really.
Very little. Like, as kids, we were very, very close. We hung out together. He was my first memory. I remember just over the age of two, obviously, being brought into a room to see this little blob in a cot and a shock of blonde hair. And I remember at first being quite jealous of him, actually, because he was getting all the attention. But we became very, very fast friends after that. We did absolutely everything together, you know, for a while. And he was the kind of kid who, he was full of life. He was full of energy. He was a very huggy kid, very emotional kid. He trusted people an awful lot. He's also incredibly sporty. We were both sporty, but he was generally better than me. He was a very good hurler. He was good at football. He was good at tennis. And one of the reasons was because he had an edge. He was very daring. He was very good at things like BMX racing or go-karting. He would always go for the corner that nobody else would go for. He was full of life.
He was also very beautiful because I saw a photograph, actually, I think, in the window of you and him as young boys with your mom. And he's a beautiful boy.
He was an incredibly good looking kid. I mean, my dad was an actor and he was a model when he was younger. And it's very, very clear, you know, where those looks went. There was one time when the actor and musician Eartha Kitt came to dinner in our house because she was friendly with my mother for a while. And our job as kids was to be waiters for Eartha Kitt and the rest. And we were introduced
pretty
to her.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it was very interesting, but I didn't really know who she was at the time. But we were introduced to her at the beginning and she shook her hands, took one look at the two of us and turned to my mother, pointing to Simon and said, "So this is the good looking one."
Oh.
And in retrospect, probably the best put down in my life, but she was absolutely right. Simon was an unusually good looking kid and that led to all sorts of opportunities for him. When he was in secondary school, he was cast as the lead in the musical they call it the opera in Belvedere, and 2 years running, which was kind of very unusual. So, yeah, he was a very good looking guy.
Well, you're handsome yourself. So at what stage did you notice, or your mom or anyone notice, any change in Simon?
It first started probably just after he had finished his Leaving Cert. So academically, he was very gifted as well. And I know I'm painting a picture of somebody who's a bit of a star here, but he really was. Mm. Had a fantastic Leaving Cert, went into college, ended up getting a first in UCD in arts. But around that time, he started to slow down and something in him started to withdraw. He was able to cope and he moved on with what he was doing and his friendships and his degree, and he got his degree. And then he applied for a master's. He struggled a bit at it, and then he went for a PhD to try and turn it into a PhD, which UCD agreed to. And he struggled with that as well. And he ended up dropping out of that. And it was clear that something had happened. Around that time, something wonderful happened to him as well. He met the au pair in the house next to ours, beautiful Spanish woman, very kind, wonderful woman. And they ended up having a relationship. They ended up getting together and they stayed together for the best part of a decade. There was something happening in his life that was slowing him down, that was starting to afflict him badly. But at the same time, he found this relationship that was an anchor for him, and not just for him, but for us and the whole family. So for the next, I'd say, 7, 8, 9 years, right up till he was about 30, he was battling this, but at the same time, he found this fantastic joy in this relationship. And, you know, overall, his 20s were a happy one.
So when did he get a diagnosis? When did you and he and everyone realise he had a serious mental illness?
Things descended very, very quickly. I think about the time he, just after he passed 30, his relationship sadly ended and he withdrew very, very sharply. He went into one or two hospitals to be assessed. He got a diagnosis, I'd say in his mid-30s, the first diagnosis of paranoid schizophrenia. And that hit my mother like a dagger through the heart. She was distraught, but it did make sense. The disease and the illness comes with it a particularly challenging set of circumstances. So Simon developed fears that he was being persecuted, that sort of incorporeal things were trying to persecute him. So it was at that point, I think probably his mid-30s, late-30s, that things really started to get quite seriously challenging for him and for the family, because he couldn't support himself. He couldn't work. He would try and start a course and he couldn't finish it. And this was a guy who, don't forget, had academically had aced everything he had ever done. Socially, he'd been effervescent. He had fantastic friends who stuck with him, by the way, through this period. But now he was in a position where he was isolated. He would refuse help, mostly. And it just, that started a 10, 15 year period for him, which was a very, very difficult one, mostly of torment.
Did medication help? I mean, what is the treatment for paranoid schizophrenia?
Yeah, so there's schizophrenia, and paranoid schizophrenia is a very particular and very challenging thing to have to deal with. We talk about mental illness and we talk about people who are really trying to tackle things like depression, for example, or severe anxiety and a whole other things which are, you know, very serious and warrant all the attention they can get. This is a different order again. This is something that robs you of something they call insight. And that is the ability to understand what's happening to you at the same time. So if you're depressed, for example, you may not be able to get out of bed. Things are really bad. You probably still have some insight into what you're going through or what's afflicting you. Mm-hmm. When you're suffering with paranoid schizophrenia, you don't have that insight. So as sure as I'm sitting with you here today, and I know that I'm sitting with you here today, my brother knew for a fact that there were maybe demons trying to attack him. There's no negotiating that as a fact in your mind. Now, it's treated with medication, and Simon responded reasonably well to some types of medication, not so well to others. The big challenge for us, though, was trying to stay with medication and stay on a medication plan, because if you believe that you're being persecuted, you lose trust in almost everyone around you. And I mean almost everyone. Mm. And my mother devoted many, many years, 15 years at least more, to the treatment of Simon. And even that relationship became strained on Simon's behalf just because of the illness. So he would start a course of medication and then he would, you know, either stop it off his own bat or he would alter the medication, often with disastrous results. And that led to periods sometimes in hospitals. Now, he was fortunate in the sense that He had health insurance that allowed him to go into private hospitals like St. John of God's or St. Pat's or Highfield for up to 180 days a year. And sometimes he took advantage of that. But he would always agitate to come out. He would say that he wasn't being treated. He would say that it wasn't doing anything for him. And it was a repeat cycle of him entering a hospital, getting treated, protesting that nothing was working, coming out, and then descending into sort of really bad horrors in his own head.
And I know your mum and your stepdad, Kevin Healy, they built an annex to their home where Simon lived. It almost destroyed your mother, didn't it? I mean,
I would say my mother had overall a really good life. She carved out in her own life amazing things for herself, not just her career, actor, 9 o'clock news reader, novelist, biographer, journalist, and including here in her last years, reading what it says in the papers here on Morning Ireland. Not just all of that, but she found moments of great joy all throughout her life, including those years. But yes, caring for Simon and her love for Simon probably became the dominant thing in her life, and she was heartbroken by it. She passed away herself 2 years ago at the age of 77. She was a very young 77. She probably did have more life in her, but the stress that she was under from having to deal with the illness that her son, her star son, had, an unrelenting illness, had a massive, massive toll on her health.
When your mum died in 2023, how and did that impact on Simon?
It was a devastating blow to him. So for all of his torment and his suffering, my mother was the one beacon of light, I think, in Simon's life. Like, my relationship with Simon through those years, his darkest years, sometimes I would only see him once every 6 or 8 weeks because I would be coming up to visit, having dinner, maybe Sunday dinner, something like that. And maybe he would come out and maybe he wouldn't. That's the illness. But my mother was there the whole time. She would have, not literally, but figuratively, doors slammed in her face. And she would still come back and try to help and try to help. She would be pleading and advocating with doctors and hospitals. Can you please try and treat Simon? Can you please see if you can make an improvement? She was his number one fan, advocate, supporter, rock. And when she passed away, he lost a huge part of that in his life. Now, I, in a small way, stepped into that role because I had to, basically. But I was living in, I live in Dublin, I have my own family. And Simon lived with my parents in County Meath. So I took over the job of dealing with doctors and hospitals and Simon as well, and trying to look after him. But it was never the same for him.
He died, Adrian, at the very end of March this year only. Do you mind telling me what you know of what happened that day? And I know you're waiting on a coroner's report.
Yeah, we were due to go on holiday. And on the morning of the holiday, we checked in with Simon. I had been in contact with him regularly in the days previously. He at the time had been agitating for, he had the same complaints. He believed he was being persecuted by demons at the time. He had his own ideas of how to deal with that, and it involved priests. And anyway, he was in a very, very bad way. And he had spent a time in a private hospital who were very kind to him, who treated him very, very well, but it just ran its course and he wasn't getting any better in there. So he was released back to a public hospital. He wasn't fit for discharge, so he was released back to a public hospital. But the strain on public hospitals here is such that they just don't keep patients like Simon in for any period of time. So he was released within a week. And that was about maybe 10 days, 11 days before we were due to go on holidays. So we checked in with him on the morning of the holiday, and he was passed away. He had passed away in bed. He had a fairly content look on his face. He looked like he was sleeping. We don't know what the cause of his passing is yet. Because of his age, he was 49. The coroner, it's fairly standard, got involved to do a report to investigate cause of death. That's pretty standard. That report can take in the Dublin area between 6 and 12 months. So we're 5 months now after his passing. So we don't know yet. I will say this about Simon, that he always had hope for his life. He was always making plans for his life. He wasn't in despair about him as a person walking on this earth. He believed that he had a future, and he believed that there was a way to get past what ailed him. He just wasn't fully aware of the degree of his illness. To me, I wondered about how he passed away, but I have no doubt in my mind, none whatsoever, that he fully intended to try and live his life. I have no doubt whatsoever about that. Because that's a big thing that people might wonder about, or we talked about it and we all came to the same conclusion.
It's such a cruel illness. Wretchedly cruel. How are you doing now? He was your only sibling, your brother.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was my younger brother as well. So when my mother passed away, I mean, that was difficult. It's tough. I mean, people talk rightly about their mothers, about being the center of gravity, center of the universe. I think my mother, that probably understated it. She was kind of sun, moon and stars for everyone. When she passed away, it was a terrible shock. But there is something about a parent passing away that you can reconcile, and that is logical at some point. When a sibling passes away, particularly a younger sibling, it leaves a different type of a hole. It's a different type of grief. And in Simon's case, I would say it's probably tinged with a feeling of guilt, because I know that the system couldn't support Simon's illness. We're just not set up in this country to do that, unfortunately. And there is definitely a lingering sense of guilt that maybe I could have devoted more of my life to prioritised him above other things that were going on in my own life to try and help him. And ironically, we became closer over the last 2 years because I was in touch with him, you know, several times a week. I would drive him places. I would drive him to appointments. I would pick him up. I would, in as much as he would allow me, which wasn't much, I would talk to him about things or discuss his treatment. I would advocate on his behalf to doctors or hospitals or social workers. I would get annoyed and frustrated on his behalf with all of the above when, you know, I would get advice saying, well, the best course of action is to let Simon enter, you know, emergency housing, that it's no good him staying where he's been living because he's gotten used to it and he needs a shock to the system, and the system needs to be shocked into getting him a proper place, and the best way to do that is for him to enter emergency accommodation. I mean, my mother got the same advice. She couldn't do it, and I couldn't do it either. It just seemed a bit barbaric to me that was the approach that was advocated, but it was. So we became closer over that period, but his illness also made, I think in his mind, me a co-conspirator in what was wrong with the world attacking him as well. So there was always, in his mind, and I could see it, he really struggled with that. He loved me and I loved him. And, you know, I'm very grateful that I told him that fairly soon after my mother died, because I didn't get the chance again, really. And I know he did. There were moments, and there were moments of joy all throughout Simon's life, even through some of the darkest periods that he had. His friends that he made in school stayed with him the whole time. And what really was the most special thing for me, I think, was his funeral and his removal. We debated or not whether to have a removal, because he had isolated himself for so long, 2 decades, that we wondered whether anyone would come to the funeral except for, you know, family and maybe a few people who were sympathetic to us. And I just made the decision, if even four or five people turn up to the removal, then that's something that Simon deserves. And about 150 people turned up to the removal. Mm. And then about maybe 250 to the funeral. And these weren't people who were there for me or for, I mean, some people were, but largely these were people, not only his friends, almost his entire year in school turned out. These are people he hadn't had contact with for the most part for 25, 30, 35 years. All of the people that he had hung out with in Claremont Court, where we grew up in Glasnevin, and their families, they all turned out. It was such a moving tribute to the guy that he was, because it was nothing to do with me. It was nothing to do with our family. That was my brother's impact, and that was the stature, that was the measure of the guy, that hundreds of people turned out for him, even after decades where he'd been isolated.
That's very moving, Adrian. Mm. Thank you very much for coming in and chatting to us today about your beloved brother. It's clear how much you loved him and your mom as well. Mind yourself.
Thank you
so much, Adrian.
Thanks for having me.